Janet Yellen's Delicate Dance. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Now, a bit of a dramatic reading here, drawing from the transcript of Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen on Capitol Hill today. Quote, "Financial conditions in the United States have recently become less supportive of growth, with declines in broad measures of equity prices, higher borrowing rates for riskier borrowers, and a further appreciation of the dollar. Although, paraphrasing now, lower long-term interest rates and cheap gas will help." Let's turn now to Susan Schmidt, Senior VP and Portfolio Manager at the Westwood Group in Dallas. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
So Janet Yellen has quite a task here on Capitol Hill, doesn't she?
Oh, she does. She has quite the day ahead of her. So she's recognizing the stress in the market. There's a great concern out there. We're not seeing any support in oil. There's continued confusion on what big economies like China and Europe are doing. She really needs to walk the line, showing that she's still here to support the U.S. market, and yet keep control so that the markets can't start to dictate what the Fed is doing, and acknowledge that there's still potential for interest rate increases if things get better.
Well, in December, when the Fed raised interest rates for the first time in nearly a decade, there was this strong hint that that would happen again several more times this year. The market's not thinking that right now.
No, the market's not, and there certainly was a strong hint. When you go back and you look at the last Fed meeting, the market had the 10-year at 2.3%. We are barely 2 months later. The 10-year Treasury is now at 1.75. That is a huge move. Now we have an expectation that maybe we won't raise at all for the rest of the year.
And as for stock prices, which seem to be bouncing a bit today, that may be what happened in Europe with the huge bank Deutsche Bank. There was a lot of fears about investors were selling some special bonds there on Monday, and the stock price was plunging, and it's up again today. So maybe a little less risk there.
So I think in this case, anytime you get this much emotion in the market, you tend to overshoot. We're probably going to have a better day today because the U.S. markets will follow the European markets, which had a relief rally where people realize, you know, the big banks are still functioning. And so what we're seeing is the banks getting really punished. Hopefully that was a little relief for Deutsche Bank and the European banks, and that will then carry through to the U.S. banks today.
Susan Schmidt is Senior VP and Portfolio Manager at the Westwood Group in Dallas. Susan, always good to talk to you.
Thank you.
We're following news of a setback for President Obama's plans to curb greenhouse gases and a victory for, among other industries, the coal people. Last evening, the Supreme Court temporarily blocked the administration's power plan, one of the president's signature efforts to deal with climate change. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is following this. Nancy, what was the plan supposed to do?
The plan would force cuts in carbon dioxide emissions, mainly from coal-fired power plants. It would also require the plants to shift toward renewable energy, encouraging them to use wind or solar power or natural gas.
And the Supreme Court has issued a stay of this clean power plan, as it's called. What does the stay do?
Well, it essentially blocks the plan temporarily. And we talked about this with Christopher Knittle. He's a professor of applied economics at MIT. He says the stay doesn't necessarily mean the plan will be delayed, but it sends a message.
It seems like it signals to us that the Supreme Court feels as though the arguments against the plan have some merit.
And those arguing against the plan say it's illegal. More than two dozen states, along with corporations and business groups, have challenged the plan. And that challenge was led by West Virginia. State officials there say the plan would have cost jobs at coal mines.
And what happens to the administration's plan now?
Well, states were supposed to submit compliance plans by this September. That could be delayed. But the first deadline for power plants to cut emissions isn't until 2022, and full compliance isn't mandated until 2030.
Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer, thank you. When we report on a big merger, Marketplace regular and Washington Post columnist Alan Sloan swings into action trying to think like a corporate tax attorney to tease out how merging companies are trying to play the great tax game. This time, it was a merger between two big companies that make equipment to control buildings and factories. Hi, Alan.
Good morning, David.
A couple of companies, Johnson Controls of Milwaukee, Tyco International, that's managed from New Jersey but has a a tax home in Ireland. They want to merge. They have to figure out how much is sort of Tyco, how much is Johnson. Why would they even care about the ratio of ownership?
There's a rule that says, in this case, if the owners of Johnson own less than 60% of the combined company, the combined company can play much better games than if the shareholders of Johnson own more than 60% of the combined company.
There are magic sweet spots. You know, you have a little bit too much Tyco and you could lose out. You have a little less Tyco. You could get these tax advantages. But how do they do this? Do they take a bunch of overseas Tyco owners, ship them to America and get them citizenship?
No, what they do is Tyco borrows $4 billion and buys a batch of Johnson stock. Because there are fewer Johnson shares outstanding, Johnson holders own maybe 57% of the combined company instead of 61%, which is what they would own if it weren't for Tyco buying Johnson shares. And what Johnson can do is about 5 seconds after the transaction is over, Johnson takes some of the $8.1 billion it has to repay the $4 billion that Tyco borrowed because they're now part of the same company.
Now, this is not illegal, but what are the implications here?
It's something about America's complicated tax code, also about a complete lack of morality or caring about anything other than the share price, because they have this idea that if they do something to get their share price up, that makes them good corporate citizens.
Your implication is if they don't pay their taxes, someone else has to.
Right. Look, by helping their company pay less tax, what they're doing is leaving the bill for everybody else. It's not as if these companies are actually leaving. They'll consume the same goods and services. It's just the company will be paying a lot less taxes for them.
Alan Sloan is also editor-at-large at ProPublica. Alan, thank you for this.
You're welcome, David. It was my pleasure.
Greedy, unpleasant, heartless, harsh words from a new Harris poll describing what people think of their cable companies. For its part, Time Warner Cable's trying to fix one especially frustrating aspect of its relationship with customers with some new technology. Nova Safo reports.
Perhaps nothing says cable company nightmare better than the 4 to 8 hour arrival windows we've all had to endure. But how about a 1 hour window? Time Warner Cable spokesman Bobby Amirshahi believes they're the only ones among the big industry players offering that, thanks to some high-tech changes.
Today we have technology that lets us dispatch our technicians much faster and much more smartly.
The company has handed out iPads to their technicians and geolocates them to the nearest customers.
We know when a tech is finishing up an assignment at one home, the one-hour window somewhere near them is starting to open for another customer. We can dynamically dispatch that technician to the next job.
Thanks to this method, the company says it has a 98% on-time record. Industry analyst Craig Moffitt says cable companies generally have been investing in better technology, both for their service and products.
They really are trying to reverse some of the damage that they've done in the past.
As well as reversing subscriber losses, at least for now. I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
And we all know that Playboy has taken away the naked pictures. The first PG-13 issue is now on the stands as that magazine tries to carve out a new spot for itself in a digital world brimming with free nudity. But the 24-year-old son of Playboy's founder is bummed about the lack of naked ladies. Cooper Hefner just told the publication Business Insider that it is a massive step backward. Cooper Hefner also wishes they would not sell the Playboy mansion. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.